everybody. Welcome back to Monday Morning Marketing. I'm Elise Glink.
And I'm John Byrne.
And you can find me at ThinkLink Media, which is the website for my digital content agency, or on Twitter at Glink. And where are you, John?
Where am I right now? Right now I'm sitting recording this. No, I'm on the web on Twitter at John M. Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, and also at GlencoMediaGroup.com and TheBurnBlog.com.
All good stuff. So we were on the radio last week and we promised our 10 marketing mistakes for the podcast. And we, of course, came up with more than 10. We're trying to winnow it down. But anyway, we thought we'd just start talking about this. And I'm not sure that these are in any order. John has ranked these in the order that they came to mind rather than in order of importance, right?
Sure.
And I think the order of importance would change anyway, depending on whether ROI is going to be at the top of your list or maybe who it is, you know, goals or problems that you're solving.
Absolutely.
Might be at the top of your list. And those are sometimes mutually exclusive.
Well, and the type of business that you run too, right?
Right. Exactly. All right. So on the radio, when we were with Steve Bertrand the other day at WGN, we talked about three of the top mistakes: failing to define your audience, random acts of marketing, and marketing from your gut. And I think those require a little bit more in depth, yes?
A little bit, sure.
All right. So let's start at the top. Failing to define your...
We agreed on this one, by the
way. We did.
This was absolutely something we both agreed was the top mistake.
All right. So not defining who your audience is. We've talked about this any number of podcasts. You can go back and look them all up. People don't know who they're talking to.
They have no idea who they're, I mean, or they have an idea, they think they have an idea of who their audience is and who their buyers and customers are, but they haven't really taken a good look on how those buyers respond to whatever stimuli that you're going to be trying to put out there to get them to buy from you, whether you're selling widgets, running a company that has a professional services company, whether you're opening a restaurant, whatever, is that you have to know who the people it is that you are selling to.
Right. And I think segmentation is huge. We've talked about this in the past as well, because everybody isn't one big lump. Right? One big group of people that you're marketing to. You might have a segment that is maybe 18 to 25, and it might be young women, and it might be college age kids. You know, there are segments that are going to require a different marketing tact from, say, 45 to 55 year old male who's into racing cars.
Right. Or, you know, a lot of the new apps these days are focused in on parents. And sometimes, you know, you're focused in on things like moms who stay at home versus moms who work.
Right.
Or, you know, dads who want to be more involved with their kids versus dads who are stay at home. I mean, the segmentation issue is one that you have to just deal with right up front. And the interesting thing about the segmentation is that you can have not only a variety of segments in terms of your audience, those segments then have to match up with what I'm guessing most people have is some segmentation in the products that they offer.
Right. Well, assuming that your products and your people are already tied together, you have to then create those personas, which we've talked about it as well, so that you have a visualization of who it is you're going for. I mean, that's really helpful. Some companies, it's funny, I was at a company, it must be like 4 years ago in San Francisco, and we were having a meeting with their marketing people. We were talking about some radio stuff that we might do together. And I looked on their board and they had all their personas listed. And one of them was the Elise.
How funny.
I'm like, what's the Elise? He goes, oh, you are like one of our key personas. You're this age and you've got kids and you're this and that. We thought it would be funny to name it for you when you were coming into the office today.
Very nice.
Which was hilarious. Nice.
Did they have an avatar or anything, or they just had your picture up there?
Yes, I look 23 forever in it. No.
Nice. Nice. Yeah.
So, but it's really helpful in a lot
of
companies.
Dorian Gray photo.
That's a...
Right.
No, I'm like Ann Landers, right? I'm going to look that age for the next 80 years. She's dead and she still looks that age.
That's right.
No disrespect to Ann Landers. I love Ann Landers. So... But a lot of companies do put up pictures or avatars or images of models or somebody that they see that they imagine reflects who that persona really is, so
right,
that they have a better idea when they're actually going out and marketing that there's some sort of image that represents this category or this segmentation of buyer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's important that you figure that out. And I mean, Steve asked us a good question, I thought, is how do you figure out who you are and where you are in terms of selling to the group? And I mean, there's all sorts of data out there. I mean, I tossed out the idea of census data, and that can be a good place to start. But there's all sorts of marketing companies out there who will sell you demographic data based upon either geography or, you know, online segmentation and the different platforms that might be available to you if you wanted to use social media or Facebook or whatever. I mean, there's it can get pretty complex, and I don't want it to, for some people to think like, oh my God, this is so complex, I can't figure it out, is the easiest way to figure out who's buying your product is to track who's buying your product.
Right. And I'm actually looking online right now. So Twitter, for example, and Google does this too, and YouTube does this, right? You have a chance to look behind it, all of your, all of the segmentation for your marketplace. So it tells you who's actually looking at all your tweets and who's engaging with you. So under audiences, right, if you go to analytics, Twitter analytics, and then you go to audiences, it tells you exactly who's listening to you. So I'm a little over 15,000 and in terms of followers, and my top interest is business and news. My top language is English. My top lifestyle type is online buyers. They buy premium brands. And if you look at how much money they make, they're mostly male, female. By the way, that ratio holds in YouTube. It holds in all of my segmentation.
Interesting. Two-thirds, one-thirds male.
Absolutely. And it's been that way forever. And so when you look, but when you look at what their household income is or their net worth, they're very high end. A third of the people who follow me have a net worth of up to $1 million. And then if you look down here, another 9% have 2 million plus. So I'm at about 40% of my audience has a significant amount of money. They buy premium brands. It's mostly male, and they want to know about money and real estate. And so this kind of segmentation is really clear. And there's a lot of, and most of them, by the way, 40% are white collar workers. So when you start to look at LinkedIn,
I'm sensing that we need to get you some deals here to endorse people on Twitter. Like, you know, we got to go after Lexus and maybe Tiffany or some of these other high end brands.
I would be happy to drive a Lexus or Mercedes. Somebody, when I used to work at WSB in Atlanta, they said, "Are you a Mercedes girl?" Because we kind of think that, you know, you're not a Mercedes girl because you're always talking about deals. And I'm like, "Why am I not a Mercedes girl? I could be a Mercedes girl." Anyway, but. Back to segmentation.
Yes, segmentation.
I think manager is a very good title for you. But again, back to segmentation. So the idea that you can figure out all this information, there's
a ton of stuff.
This is all free on Twitter. It's right. Really, really interesting. It even talks about their wireless carriers. So when you're on YouTube, when you're working in Google Trends, you can go backwards and to a lot of these different places that people are and figure out who it is who's following you, your company. This is, again, one of the reasons it's so important to have a voice out there with Twitter, with Facebook. They all give you these kinds of analytics. And then using a little bit of money, and we've talked about this,
right.
You know, pay-per-click, PPC, you can actually boost your reach into that specific audience. And then that, you know, tends to be pretty awesome down the line. But
right.
So anyway, identifying your audience, there's lots of interesting information out there,
right.
and then you can play to that.
Well, and there's other aspects. I mean, you can go to the Direct Marketing Association. I know has lots of stuff that if you are a more traditional marketer that mm-hmm. you want to use the postal service and postcards and all
yep.
that, and you want to buy, if you want to buy certain zip codes to do mailings in, and they have all sorts of demographic data that you can look at and use. And they might be willing to even not so much sell you, but give you to the extent with an eye toward trying to then sell you on their mailing services or their printing services or other associated services.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't use the excuse that you can't get the information to figure out who your audience is.
Right. So number one on our list is figure out who it is you're selling to. And then,
everything follows from there.
Everything follows from there. All right. So marketing number two, you've got, and I agree with this, random acts of marketing.
Random acts of marketing.
This is such a great thing. I would throw Super Bowl ads into this because I think there are some companies that so just want to be on the Super Bowl with Beyonce that they'll spend anything. But what do you think of this random act of marketing?
Queen Bey, right?
Queen Bey.
Queen Bey.
Yes, Queen Bay.
Anyway, no, I mean, random acts of marketing are something that basically I think people who don't want to spend a whole lot of time figuring out audiences and figuring out good ways to connect with audiences, they just do it. Or they're the ones who always sort of follow somebody else's advice that says, you know what you should be doing? You should be doing X. And they're like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. I'll do that. And they go and do it. And they're like, well, that didn't work. Why didn't that work? Because you didn't have anything else behind it to understand what it is you were trying to achieve.
Right. And it's unfortunate because a lot of money is lost that way. And I am careful.
And people prey on this too, by the way.
They do. They do. We don't, but a lot of people do.
Well, and in fact, I've told
people. It's not a sustainable business model, but, you know, this kind of random act thing.
Well, unfortunately, I would say, I think there's some people, well, it's okay, so if you're the marketer and the business, it's absolutely not a sustainable model because random acts of marketing will put you out of business quicker than you can do almost anything else other than perhaps, you know, violate the law. But I do think that there are some companies out there who prey upon the fact that, you know, let's face it, most small businesses do fail or close within 2 years. You know, realistically and historically, and some of it is from bad financial management and all sorts of other reasons, but some of it I think is from bad marketing, that people are just sort of spending whatever investment money they have to do marketing on things that are random and not geared toward bringing in the types of customers or clients that it is that you need to be sustainable.
Right. And everything is so integrated today, right? Because once you identify them and then you bring them in, it, you know, in marketing aside, well, it's remarketing,
right,
which is how do you use the fact that you've had these people as
retention,
customers,
right,
to either retain them or to leverage other business from them.
Right,
so,
right,
you know, asking for the sale is one thing. Asking for a referral is another thing. And that is a form of marketing. And again, people don't ever take it, or sometimes they don't take it to that next level, which is to make it sustainable and to reach out and bring people in,
right,
more people.
Well, and I mean, we could go off on a bunch of different tangents on this one too, in terms of trying to avoid randomness, but just to take off on the point that you just made about selling people other services, it's sort of the same idea of, you know, you have a grocery store or retail operation that your main thrust is to sell X, but you just happen to have, like, you know, for another dollar, you can have a piece of candy up in front, you know, throw that in too. Or at a restaurant, you know, the vast majority of money is made on the attenuated things like apps and desserts with drinks. And, you know, the food, the main plates that you actually buy at a restaurant, are the profit margins usually on them are much smaller than on all the other stuff. And if you were to add up your bill, which I know most of us have at some point, you realize, holy cow, 60% of this meal was spent on crap. I mean, the actual dinner that I had, or
right,
whatever, the lunch, the sandwich, is, you know, less than half of the bill.
Right. Well, you can, one of the things, when people say to me, well, how do I still eat out and save money? I always say to them, look, what you can do is just eliminate all drinks. If you eliminate all drinks,
right,
right, no wine, no beer, no soft drinks, no lemonade, no fizzy water.
Right.
Just eliminate that. It saves a third of the bill every time.
Absolutely. And so what's interesting is, do you, as a marketer or as a business owner, you flip that around and you realize, wow, this is the area that I should be pursuing in terms of trying to get more people to buy it, because that's where I'm making a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right. So that's your random act of marketing. Don't do that. Marketing from your gut. So this is, again, just a, I think, another way of saying, if you don't have data, you know, all you're doing is a random act of marketing.
Right. I think this is what we should do. I feel it in my gut that this is the way to market this business.
Right.
Really? Do you have anything else to go on? Just your gut, huh? Well, my gut's usually right. I'm like, okay.
Is your gut usually right about marketing?
Right.
Like, I get gut legal strategy, and then you can, like,
well, and usually,
and then you can verify.
Right. Well, and usually what you're talking, I mean, another way to think about this is a couple different ways, which is sort of segues into the next mistake. But, I mean, the idea of going from a gut usually means that you have experience, right? Because gut decisions are usually made on instinct or
right,
experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have neither as a business owner, you better not market from the gut, because you're going to make a big mistake.
Yeah, and I think business owners who have gut senses about their business, those can be really good, but marketing doesn't always work in that direction.
Right, and the risk is that, you know, you're relying upon past experiences, which may not be what's happening in the future, because let's face it, there's all sorts of change going on in every single industry, in every single way, and it's the whole financial disclosure,
I was just
right?
going to say, past performance is no guarantee of future results.
Absolutely. I mean, that is a marketing bylaw, I think. It's written down and chiseled into stone somewhere, and it's more than just that financial disclosure, really.
Right. All right. So,
and the marketing of the mirror, marketing was the next
the mirror
one.
Is the next one,
and it's just really tied to the. A lot of people then may think, well, I'm, you know, all the customers are just like me. I should just market to what I think is best. And, you know, you made a great point on the radio show, is that this is sort of a logical fallacy that a lot of people fall into in any number of industries, journalists among them.
Oh yeah. If it happens to me, it's going to have got to be happening to somebody else, which is true. It just may not be relevant.
Well, that's right. I mean, especially if it's happening to you, are you your market for what it is you're trying to sell?
Right.
Maybe you are, although it's kind of bad if you like are, let's say, you know, it's always bad for the alcoholic to open a liquor store or the candy or the, you know, the sweet tooth to open a candy store. I mean, there's
bakery.
You know, maybe you should be doing something that you enjoy, obviously, but perhaps it may not be the best marketing move always to be opening a business that, in fact, you are a customer of.
Right. Absolutely. I think there's more to say in that. We'll probably have to do a whole show.
Well, in my field, you know, that there's a saying about a lawyer who has a lawyer who represents himself or herself as a fool for a client, right? I mean, sort of along those same lines.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right. One of my very favorites, not taking enough risk. Risk is defined in all kinds of ways. And a lot of times people mistake lightning in a bottle for risk.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing with marketing to the mirror. Like if something worked once and worked big, oh, well, if I do it again, I'll get the same result. And that typically doesn't happen. But this idea that somehow you did something crazy and it was lightning in a bottle and you got 100 million hits or whatever, if you do it again, it's the exact same way that's going to get that same result. So not enough risk also looks at the other side of it, which is you just do the same thing over and over and over again, and you don't try anything new.
Yeah, and I mean, I subscribe to the law of diminishing returns in this aspect, right? I mean, even if you get such a great result once and you try it again, you're not going to see the same. I mean, the law of averages being what it is too, it's not going to be the same. And then I think you're absolutely right too, just keeping doing the same thing over and over again. You know, I suppose if you are in a business where you don't really have to market, I suppose. I'm thinking
who doesn't have to market these days?
You know, garbage collectors. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe
they
even
do
waste
market.
Management.
It might be called graft. I don't know, but that's marketing.
Right. It's like, well,
I'm buying tables at my political friends' parties.
Right, You know, but the idea that, you know, you might have a business that doesn't necessarily need to have the same level of marketing as another business is there. On the other, so that you don't have to invest. It's funny, I was having this conversation today with when I was working at my old law firm. We used to have practices that made a lot of money. Just the money kept rolling in. And for better or for worse, they were like, I would come to them and say, you know, what can we do to help in terms of marketing? And they're like, nothing. It ain't broke. We're not going to ask you to fix it. And so I think there are some situations where if you're already making money, you may not want to fuss around too much with marketing. So the mistake there is sort of tied in. It's the corollary of not risking enough is maybe risking too much.
See, but here's what I would say to them. They would say to you, we're already making money. It's not broke. And I would say, there's always something that we can do. If you're already leading the field, I'd really like to do thought leadership. Can we leverage what you've achieved here for some of our other areas? Can we bring that name and expand it a little bit by working with some of your clients and getting some of their other business?
Yeah.
Like, what is it that we can do to broaden the reach that you've already established? You've established a beachfront. Let's expand that beachfront. Let's reclaim beachfront. So there's always different ways of, I think, of looking at it and trying to make hay with when the sun shines.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. I mean, the interesting thing is that the reality of the situation is that if you get people in that situation who are, kind of fat and happy, so to speak, it's really hard to push them off the dime. And it can be, but I totally agree that it can be dangerous for them not to at least be kind of looking around the corner a little bit to see, is this golden goose suddenly going to die of a heart attack?
But then you look at a way, how do you appeal to something like that to get them to work with you? Again, you're sort of, it's internal marketing in a way. And I guess
it can be
it can be tough. Sometimes you want to do it, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you take a more junior person in that industry who's already in that group and doing really well. Maybe you make a little bit more with them. They're more incentivized.
Right, a little hungrier, right.
They're a little hungrier, but they still share the inside knowledge and they get the shine of it. And it's really interesting. It's that whole push pull. Like they want to make them bigger, but they don't want to make them bigger. They might leave. So, in the newspaper world,
they can grow beyond us. Right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I had Ask Amy Dickinson on a panel once with Ron Lieber of the New York Times, and the three of us were talking about how our syndication companies are pushing us to develop our social media followings and to engage in a larger way, but then they don't really want us to do that because we might leave and go to somebody else. So it's just...
Right. Or they might get so much from you in the social media space that they stop reading you in their newspaper.
Yes. There's all sorts of interesting things. But anyway...
It's the law of unintended consequences, right?
Right. So one other thing about not taking enough risk, that you sometimes on the flip side, you take risk unnecessarily.
Right.
So you're out there and you think, okay, well, I'm just going to like scattershot. I'm going to buy some Twitter ads here, and I'm going to do some Facebook here, and I'm going to put some radio ads on here, and I'm going to do this. And it's not ready for prime time. So I think our big mistake that, I don't know, do you have it on this list?
I think we sort of have a little bit.
Here's the big mistake that I see, which is not having enough strategy behind this kind of one-shot,
so you know, it's not deal. random acts of marketing. It's just not strategic enough acts of marketing.
I think if you don't plan out, I just don't understand how you make this work. Like, we do strategy Bibles for our clients. It's often our initial engagement, right? And they'll say, well, what do you do for that? And we'll say, well, we're going to take 6 weeks, and we're going to look at everything that your competitors are doing, right? Competitive research. We're going to look at what you're doing, and we're going to figure out what you could be doing differently, better, fill a niche, holes, and then we're going to work on messaging, and we're going to figure out exactly what it is you need to say in order to get the result that you're really trying to get, and then we're going to tell you where to place that message. That's what we do for you. And then if you want to go and run with it on your own, you've got a playbook. And if you don't want to run with that on your own, you can hire us to execute for you, because having that strategy step by step by step by step, I think, are things that companies just don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
They might think in one area, like, I want to do radio. So what does radio look like? But what is it in terms of the larger put it all together kind of thing?
Well, right. And oftentimes it reminds me, it's sort of like the camel is a horse by committee. I mean, sometimes you can have marketing, especially if you work at a bigger company, you know, you have constituencies who are invested in all sorts of different types of marketing, and you end up having to take and divvy up a marketing budget into those different constituencies, and you end up with this camel.
Right. Right. And that's
it ain't too attractive. And you know what? Their breath is really bad, I've heard.
But the baby camels are so
cute. Yeah, they're
cute. Right. All right. Amateurish marketing. This is your next
one. Ties into a little bit of what we talked about, too.
Right. And you say it doesn't need to be ultra sophisticated, but you need for things to look and sound good. I think this is totally true. It drives me crazy. Not to mention my son, Alex, who's like a font fiend.
Oh, God.
Where he's like, if you show him anything with Comic Sans, it doesn't matter what it says. It could be the Declaration of Independence. He would crash
it. I would like to see
it.
That, actually. I would like to see the Declaration of Independence in Comic Sans.
You should just, Alex gets on his high horse about Comic Sans, and I'm just like, really?
Many people do, actually. There's, I think, a website out there that says something like IHateComicSans.com.
I'm sure my son started that. But but there's amateurish marketing and a bunch of other things, too. Like, I was listening to an ad for a payroll company. It's all over the radio, and they must be running it everywhere because they kind of said companyname.com/Chicago. And so, you know, when they're doing that,
so it's really targeted.
It's targeted, but not targeted.
Right, exactly.
And it doesn't sound, the brand of this company was very sort of warm and friendly and cool and hip and internet. And this ad just sounded a little on the cheap side. And so I was listening to, and I've heard it now on a bunch of radio. So they're blitzing.
Wow.
Not quite sure why they think now is the best time for this as opposed to just before the end of the year when you could change over for the whole year. But
interesting, yeah.
It's right. So they must be
like
doing
401k
a tax
stuff or IRA stuff.
A tax play, maybe. Like before
okay.
the tax
yeah, that
time.
Makes sense.
But still, it's the wrong time to switch for. It's really the wrong time to switch. But anyway, they're getting a lot of airtime and they're buying a lot of airtime, I should say. But it doesn't read quite right. Like, the tone is a little off. The wording is a
right.
little
you
bit off.
You want your payroll company to sound pretty sophisticated because payroll is pretty important.
It is, and but it was interesting to me. This is kind of what you're saying about amateurish marketing. It feels almost like I'm watching one of those lawyers, those bankruptcy lawyers
oh, yes.
on cable
listen
in the middle of the night.
Listen to my bankruptcy tapes.
Right. And buy, you know, come see us. We do all the bankruptcies. And,
right.
you know, you got in an accident, we can help you.
Right.
I kind of feel like that's the message that this payroll company is giving me. And I didn't like it. I responded badly to
well,
it.
Well, so my pet peeve on this amateurish marketing oftentimes is car dealers on TV. They
right.
are the worst, and they bring in some you know, nice young sports guy. You know, the backup goalie for that Blackhawks is on a certain car dealer's ads right now, and they're just painful to
right.
watch. You're like, oh, God.
Why are they so bad? Like, it could be so much better.
Why
but
are they so bad?
But they're all so bad. Like,
right, right. Right. I mean, and what's interesting is that over the time span, those of you who live in Chicago, I mean, you know, it used to be much more annoying because the car dealers all were the ones with some money, the individual
yeah.
local car dealers, as opposed to the big companies
right.
who buy the ads during the newscast now. But every once in a while, you see these local, I mean, it's like it's like a cable access TV show or Saturday Night Live skit gone bad.
Right. And you wonder, and this is a great example, like you wonder why they're buying this. Is it because they've bought these ads for all these years?
It's not cheap either, yeah.
No, but wouldn't it be better for them? Like, don't most people go to dealer.com or don't most people
or
just...
cars.com or
cars.com. Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, a bunch of those are all now joined together.
They're the same. You just type in one word and it brings up the same
website. Right. I mean, don't most people start their search for a new car online just like they do for a house? 95% of people will look for a new house online. That's why Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com have duked it out and are getting 100 million hits a month, right?
Right.
Because they know that that's where people are. And you don't really see realtors on TV. Don't see them on TV. You will see realtor organization.
Right. Or a big,
we're not sure what they're doing.
A big company like Coldwell Banker, you know, will do some branding.
They might do some national branding, right. But you're not seeing those kinds of ads.
And no local. Then it won't be, you know, so, Susie, he is our realtor. And
right.
Know.
So our car dealers just live in the, you know,
40.
Okay. So is it that nothing's changed? Is it a random act of marketing?
Is it
just badly executed stuff? It's painful. Okay.
Painful.
So clearly we don't like that. So anyway, amateurish marketing in any industry, just the world has gotten so sophisticated, it just makes you look bad.
Well, right. And the interesting thing, I think in the past, you could argue that to do something professional was really expensive. But now in a lot of ways, and you've experienced this on the other end, I know in your company, is that a lot of people are out there who can provide some pretty good quality stuff at not a very expensive price.
Exactly.
So.
Right. There are some great people out there. All right, one and done marketing efforts. We kind of talked about this a little bit,
yeah.
Which is Super Bowl is my
favorite
thing to
talk
about.
Well, and advertising as marketing is one of those, you just can't do a single ad and expect that you're going to drive demand or sales.
Right. Somebody told me once that when I first sold my very first book, my associate publisher at Random House said, look, it's going to take at least 7 mentions of your book or seeing you or reading your stuff, 7 touches to get somebody to buy your book. And I said, okay, how do we do that? And I think today it might even be 14 to 16.
Oh, yeah. It's
simply
it's
because there's
much
so much
more
noise.
More accelerated, exactly. Right.
So you have to really think about how you're going to plan that. You can't do one mail drop, for example.
Right. That's right. I mean, what is the magic number might be a good question as a follow-up there.
Right.
It depends. I mean, and I'm sorry for such a squishy answer to that.
Oh, no.
Let's talk about what it depends.
Okay. So Jeb Bush spent $15,000 per vote in one of the recent
elections? Crazy. Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Hundreds
right?
of millions, you know, whatever, $125, $150 million, and was in sixth place. So there's a whole lot of reasons for that. But when you think about what he's spending per person versus Donald Trump, who I think is only spending like $20, or Bernie Sanders, who's spending maybe 30-something.
Right. I think people are paying him.
I think they are paying him.
He's got a net profit going, I think, right now in some places.
Yeah. But when you think about what the candidates are actually spending and how they're actually harvesting free time.
Well, absolutely.
Then you realize, you know, just apply that to say to any product, right?
Right.
So you could spend $15,000 and be in eighth place, you know, to your competitors, or you could be spending $4 per person and be at the top of the list.
It's about
being savvy and smart.
Right.
All right. What's next on your list? Spending too much or too little. We just did that.
Sure.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things that a lot of times these mistakes all tie together too, right?
Of course.
And they're compounded. It's like a plane crash. You know, planes don't crash just because of one little error. It's just this compounding, cascading effect.
Right. Wasn't that Seth Godin who wrote that it's like, oh, not Seth Godin. It's the other guy from Blink, Malcolm Gladwell.
Oh, Malcolm Gladwell. Right.
Right. He wrote that there are, you know, you have to have 7 catastrophic errors in a row and then a plane crashes.
Right. And it's one of those things. I think that's what a business failing is too. I mean, I don't think usually a business fails because it spent all its money on one Super Bowl ad, right? I mean, it's bad decision followed by another bad decision followed by another bad decision followed by maybe a little bit of bad luck.
And then the ad is terrible.
Right. And bad poor execution.
Right.
Bad decisions and poor executions are usually in multiple iterations are what kills business.
And to be fair, you may not actually recognize you've made a bad decision just the way you don't often know that you've spelled a word wrong. Right?
Absolutely.
So if you're making a bad decision, you might, and you're in a vacuum particularly, you might think it's a really good decision. And so that's why people test. They do A/B testing. Online is cheaper than not. You can test your ad online before you unveil it somewhere. less expensively and see if that works right. and how it plays. And there are just a lot of ways to do that.
Well, and people thinking that they have to either go big or go home. I mean, that sort of ties into what next is that people not being patient enough with their marketing efforts. You know, right. there are ways that if you want to market a business, you realize that marketing is an investment, right? Mm-hmm. It is not a cost. It's an investment. Yes, it costs money. But, you know, if you're going to be doing marketing the right way, you have to think about an investment in building an audience, creating a market if you need to do that, or getting into and start, you know, gaining market share. And you have to invest and think of your marketing dollars as investments, not as just sheer costs.
I had to laugh because my younger son got into the University of Illinois. So I got an email that said, your son is going to Illinois. And I said, so I looked at Michael and I said, are you going there? He goes, no, they sent me the same email. I'm not going there. So I click on the ad.
Good sales. You assume the close.
Right. So I click on it and then it says, you're investing in your child's education. There is no, you know, this is now about how do you sell the parents on whatever the future cost is. And I just thought the use of the word invest and child education tuition payment was really interesting.
Well, right. It's like, what return am I going to see on that investment?
Right.
It's
fascinating.
Does it pay at least 8% on an annual basis?
Right.
Can I deduct it off my taxes?
Well, and so this leads right into ROI.
ROI,
because,
right.
you know.
Which arguably is at the bottom here, but could be at the top too, right?
Well, we do top 10 lists. 10 is most, you know, the number one thing,
right.
mistakes that people make are right. not looking at ROI.
Not looking at ROI.
What is ROI? All of these mistakes tie together, right? What was your goal when you set out for it? What did you want to achieve? Were you looking at branding? Were you looking at conversion? Were you looking at, I don't even know what you might be looking at, but did you figure out what it would take to spend? And then were you right? And sometimes these things are guesses and you're not going to know.
Right. I mean, lead generation is another, you know, used in a lot of marketing is used for lead generation.
Yep.
And your sales force then goes and follows up with the leads. You know, conversion is a little bit tougher to do just simple marketing for conversion purposes because you usually need some sort of sales element or some sort of, if not sales, pure mm-hmm. sales, some sort of follow up. But I mean, being able to set when you first sort of do your marketing plan, set metrics in to be able to understand where are you gaining the touch points with people, what is the nature and value of the touch points, how many touch points is it going to need before you finally do get the sale kind of thing. I mean, that's how you build in an ability to measure ROI.
So it's interesting. We were building a website for a financial services client, and in the year we had been building up from, we started the year at 30,000 hits, this is a couple of years ago, 30,000 unique monthly visitors. And we were nearing at the end of the year to 60,000 unique monthly visitors. And they said, well, we want to set some goals for you for next year. And I said, okay. And they said, how about 90,000 visitors? And I said, what are you basing that on? Like, that's a number pie in the sky. And they're like, well, we don't know. What do you think is right? And I said, how about giving us a range? Like 70. I said, it's really hard to game Google. So why don't we say 75,000 to 95,000 unique monthly visitors, no PPC. We're not going to pay to get anybody
right,
there.
Right. So you just, yeah.
It's all natural mm-hmm. search, natural organic search. And they're like, oh, that seems like a good idea. Now we beat that.
Right.
And we ended up at 95,000. But the
you
idea,
need to see where the curve is going first, you know, and all sorts of things come into that. Right?
There are, and you have to be reasonable about, and you can't just say, well, I want 100% conversion.
Right.
That's the goal. Like, okay, but what is it really? And
right.
how do you, you know, not burn your people out by having unrealistic expectations, but at the same time, delivering a really decent ROI? So if somebody says to me, like we have a client and they said, well, if we do PPC, right, pay-per-click, and we every dollar we invest, we know we're going to get $1.05 back. I said, well, I'd do that deal all day long.
Right. Right. I mean, you'd be foolish not to.
You'd be foolish not to. Well, what about $1.04? Yes. $1.03? Yes. $1.02? Is there something else I can do that would generate the $1.05? So you have to decide, you know, what it's going to take to get you the kind of return that you think is reasonable.
Well, and just to go back for a second too, it's, I mean, at least you were in a position to be able to understand, oh, I've got the $1.05 return. You know, there are a lot of people in running businesses out there who have no idea of what type of return they're getting on their investments.
Correct.
You know, I mean, and that's the one I go back to. I know it sounds sort of like a broken record here, but you know, getting metrics and measuring things periodically. You don't have to do it every day. It's not like you're on a diet and you have to get on the scale every day. I mean, you have to check in at a reasonable amount of time, especially maybe before you write the check for the next investment, to see, hey, am I actually getting what I thought, or at least anywhere near what I thought, or maybe even more on what I thought I was going to get at the outset.
Right. And I think there's, you know, really the big main sites are gaming you to spend more and more.
Absolutely.
And they absolutely, Facebook really wants you to spend money now, or nobody's going to see your posts.
Right.
Twitter is starting to figure out how they want you to spend more money. Yeah. So there's really...
I've even heard that, you know, LinkedIn is... I mean, LinkedIn is not a pay-to-play site, but they're doing stuff that, with some of their ancillary services like job postings.
Oh, they are pay-to-play. Right. I've done, for jobs especially, ran a job ad there, and we paid for it. And I got to tell you, I thought the results were awful. I would never pay on their site. It was a test, right?
They just introduced a new mobile app for jobs too. Interesting.
They're sending me. This is hilarious. I don't understand what they think I do for a living, even though I tell them on the site what I do for a living, because they keep sending me like low level content jobs. It's bizarre. Like, why do they think?
Yeah, well, it's the scattershot. I mean, it's not quite
working the way it should work.
This is a whole nother, maybe a whole nother podcast to talk about the idea of artificial intelligence and where we're going to be in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of marketing. And I think that unless there's some huge advances in programming, which there certainly could be,
right.
I mean, it's clear to me that right now the artificial intelligence being engaged to reach people is not always that great.
No, but it will be very, very soon. Give it another couple of years.
We'll see. We'll see. People said that a couple years ago.
Right. Well, it's, what did I see? I saw that the Obama administration said if you earn under $20 an hour, your job's at risk of being replaced by a robot.
Wow.
Right. Wow. $20 an hour is $40,000
a year. Even like the McDonald's workers, you know? I mean, those types of people earn certainly minimum wage.
Maybe robots can make burgers.
You turn it into the McDonald's automat then or something like that. But anyway.
I don't know. All right, let's go back over our top 10 or 11 or 12 marketing mistakes. Failing to define your audience, random acts of marketing, marketing from your gut, marketing to the mirror, not taking enough risk, amateurish marketing. We think it needs to look and sound good. The one and done marketing efforts, like you're going to do one drop mailing and that's it. Spending too much or too little on your marketing efforts, being impatient about your marketing efforts, and not tracking the ROI. And then all the other stuff we said.
Right, which is all related.
All right. All right, well,
That's a lot. That was a pretty meaty ton of mistakes there.
I know.
So people could just listen in and just take the reverse and create a marketing plan.
Right. And if you do, we want to hear from you. So you can find me online, thinklinkmedia.com or at Twitter. And John?
I'm at John M. Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, on Twitter, thebyrneblog.com, and also Glencoe Media Group. So are we wrapping up?
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap up.
Okay.
We got to go do some marketing.
A little long today, too, so.
Oh, yeah, we did. Oh, well, lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
More to come.
Thanks. Bye.